Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So we made an announcement on yesterday's show that on Wednesday, we're going to return of SEC Country Live. We're going to do it once a week right now. It's kind of a new version of that show. It'll be 3 p.m. on Wednesdays on the SEC Country video pages, video channels, the SEC Country Live on YouTube, SEC Country on Facebook. And this is a real thrill for me because in addition to talking about Georgia football on this show each and every day, I love the SEC. The slogan of the league, and sometimes it kind of gets made fun of, but the idea that it just means more is kind of corny and trite as it may sound. I really do think that the thing that makes SEC sports so much fun is the way in which people get worked up about things, right? I mean, there is a passion and an intensity related to all of this that just does not exist other places. And, you know, this time of year, it's one of the reasons why we do Dog Nation Daily every single day is because there's kind of always something going on, even if it's just fans in each other's throats. And, you know, we are a show for fans. We've said that before. We don't make any kind of apologies for that. We like to be where the fans are. And there was a very funny moment this week that I think is at least worth us paying just a little bit of attention to today. So obviously one of the big offseason storylines in the SEC has been an entirely new coaching staff at Auburn. Brian Harsin was hired as head coach, kind of a proven winner at Boise State, now trying to try his hand at the SEC. And Harsin made a couple of bold moves in terms of his coordinator hires. Derek Mason, the former Vanderbilt coach, was hired as defensive coordinator. I think for Harsin, this was a really big deal. And then there was also the hiring of Mike Bobo as offensive coordinator. And the Bobo thing was a little bit controversial because it looked like Bobo was going to be re-upped and he was going to remain offensive coordinator at the place where he worked a year ago at South Carolina after having lost his job at head coach at Colorado State the previous year. But Bobo decided to make the move from South Carolina to Auburn. Now, in a normal situation, I think most people would say that Auburn's a better job higher up the SEC pecking order than South Carolina is. I have suggested, I'm not quite so sure at this stage of the game, just given how deep and challenging the SEC West is, given the fact that Harsin had a map, needed a map to even find Alabama before coming here, not a guy that spent a lot of time within the typical SEC footprint. I'm not quite so sure that Bobo is going to be happy with the decision that he made, but nonetheless, that he did make it. And now for a second consecutive year, Georgia will be battling against one of its former coaches, one of its former players, on an opposing sideline now with Mike Bobo as offensive coordinator there at Auburn, which is one of Georgia's biggest rivals, as obviously all of you are aware. So it's this interesting dynamic. Now, for Georgia and Auburn over the years, this is not necessarily a new thing, right? I mean, people who are a little older than me love to tell the stories of Pat Dye, the great former Georgia player, as Auburn's head coach. Vince Dooley, the great former Auburn player, as Georgia's head coach. For a long time, this rivalry known as the Deep South's oldest had an Auburn alumnus coaching Georgia and a Georgia alumnus coaching Auburn. And, you know, Coach Dooley has kind of famously always described that Georgia-Auburn rivalry as kind of feuding cousins, folks who are normally kind of get along with each other, but they like to play, you know, football against each other. That may have been sort of the quaint truth back in the 70s and the 80s and, you know, things like that. I don't quite believe that's the current state of the Georgia-Auburn rivalry. I don't think Auburn fans like Georgia at all. I don't think Georgia fans like Auburn at all. And so it's a little more weird now to have a Georgia alumnus coaching Auburn than it would have been years ago back when you had, you know, guys like that on both sidelines. But no matter where you went to school and no matter where you kind of cut your, you know, teeth as a coach, Bobo is now the Auburn coach. So when you are there, you have to talk up Auburn, whether he believes it or not. That's what you got to do. So this week, Mike Bobo met with reporters, kind of his introductory press conference. I think it's the first time he's spoken to reporters there. And he's, you know, asking lots of questions. Obviously, they're ushering a fairly new offense into the plains there. So that's kind of a big deal. But the final question of the press conference, I'm gonna let you hear the full thing here, is, you know, just kind of exactly what Bobo's connection to Auburn really is and what Auburn has meant to him before he got the job. And Bobo, like any coach would do, does the best that he can to kind of sell himself up as a guy that has lifelong ties to Auburn, even though that he's worked at a half dozen other schools, seemingly anyway, and spent so much of his life connected to UGA. Bobo did his best to sell himself as having lifelong ties to Auburn. This is Mike Bobo from earlier in the week.
You grew up not too far from Auburn. You played against Auburn. Just talk about what's your impressions of Auburn and what you thought of Auburn growing up?
Yeah, well, my dad sent me they found a picture of me with a big sign that said Pat Dye Football Camp, and there was a picture of me at Pat Dye Football Camp when I was in fourth grade. So I grew up kind of coming to Pat Dye Football Camp from Thomasville over here. So I've got a lot of memories from Auburn. They used to take care of my dad. They used to take care of all the high school coaches. They'd have bird hunts and quail hunts, and my dad would get invited and had a big time. But we were only 2.5 hours away and came and watched them practice a lot over here. It was a lot closer than it was Athens, which was 4.5. So I have a lot of memories from Auburn. It reminds me of, some of those South Georgia towns, where it's football in the community. I think that's kind of what Auburn is football in the community. And, I think this is the ultimate college town when you think about Auburn University.
All right, so a couple of things here before we get to that line there at the end, the ultimate college town. First of all, it was very funny. Our producer today, Connor Riley, taking some liberties with the credit there for Mike Bobo as a sarcastically mentioning hater of Athens. That's really funny. Also, one more thing to add here, and I say this in all loving kindness. I really do. One thing that Bobo, if I could humbly suggest, a phrase he might want to avoid using is, they used to take care of the high school coaches. Hey, listen, Bobo's been working a lot of places the last few years. I don't think he realizes how close to home that phrase hits in terms of some of the things that certain fans have maybe said over the years. So just be really careful when you throw out a phrase like, hey, they used to take care of the high school coaches. There are a lot of Georgia fans who say, yeah, I know. So just be really careful how you use that phrase. But nonetheless, the point of all of this is, at the very end of that, Bobo says, listen, I grew up coming to Pat Dye's football camp, and now you're here, you look around, you see Auburn, Alabama, and he says this is kind of the ultimate college town. Now, listen, obviously for Georgia fans, one of the things that Georgia fans are very proud of is Athens' stature as the ultimate college town. I think most Georgia fans would rightly believe, and I think there's a lot of neutral observers who would also rightly believe, that Athens ranks as among the very best so-called college towns in the entire country. So when word of Bobo's remarks got out, there was a lot of reaction. I don't think it's too strong of a phrase to say stern rebuke from many Georgia fans. We're showing you some of the examples of this on Twitter here. I'll try to read a couple of these. A lot of these I can't even read, so I'll try to read a few of them. But basically, there's a lot of, a lot of GIF responses here. A lot of people saying that, Bobo's just kind of saying whatever. I see Chris McCall saying he's trying really hard to sell it. There was an account that said he ate a bunch of edibles when he was out there in Fort Collins, Colorado. I see a Benjamin, what's his name? A Benedict Arnold. That's the traitor, right? Benedict Arnold. I see a Benedict Arnold reference. So a lot of Georgia fans not happy at all with what, Bobo said here. And I totally understand that. To me, this is like, and I was going to try to cite some examples of this, but so help me, people are so sensitive about this kind of stuff, so I'm not going to mention any names here. But over the years, politicians always do this. I'm a lifelong fan of so-and-so team, but now I'm so-called lifelong fan of this team. Or I'm in one town thinking I'm in another town, and I'm talking up a coach that's completely different than that. Politicians, when they want to kind of engender themselves well to the group that they're in right now, the place they're in, have a tendency to try to use sports to do so, and a lot of times it kind of falls flat. This does sort of feel like Bobo, like the aging rock star up on the stage says, hey, nobody rock and rolls like the folks in Cleveland, Ohio. And then the bass player's like, we're actually in Pittsburgh. I mean, Pittsburgh, PA. I mean, there's an element of Bobo just sort of saying whatever he has to do to get by here. And I think a lot of coaches are like that. Wherever they're working is the best place. Whatever they have to sell to make it sound great, that's what they're going to do. But we are now entering into kind of a brand new era where all of a sudden Mike Bobo, who for a long time was, somewhat controversial offensive coordinator at UGA, but for the most part, I think a guy that a lot of UGA fans had some affection for. Certainly great memories of him as a quarterback at Georgia going back in the kind of the post Eric Zier era, but now he's on the other side, and maybe Bobo's presence there at Auburn's going to spice up that rivalry a little bit. Obviously Auburn fans looking for anything they can to spice it up, because it's been UGA dominance for so many years. And I think the one thing that's clear here in 2021, whether a former Georgia guy like Bobo's on the sideline or not, a lot of Georgia fans looking forward to seeing that streak of wins against Auburn continue, even with some new coaches on the helm there. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Glad to have with us no matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch. As far as the video side goes, podcast, the Apple Player, Google Player, worldfamousdognation.com. Some of you listen directly on SoundCloud. Obviously on the radio, the friends in Athens and Athens Sports Radio 960. There are a bunch of ways to get to us. Glad you're here. And a huge thanks to our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia for making all possible. The studio that I sit in, the producer to help me out, the microphone that I get to speak into, all the things that we're able to do here made possible by our friends at ESOG. They have been good friends of ours for a long time. They are also proud partners of UGA. So they are the ones I promise you want to trust. You got crack walls or a wet basement. You got those waterproofing foundation issues. My friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia can step up to the plate and provide you the expertise you need. They are a solutions-based company. That means they are eager to help you solve your problem. Sometimes it's a small fix. Sometimes it's a bigger fix. Either way, you want Engineered Solutions of Georgia on your side. With two full-time engineers on staff, really smart folks. As I said before, proud partners of UGA, which makes them fun to do business with. Simply find them online. It's a 678-ESOG now. Call that number, 678-ESOG now. That'll get you in touch with my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. All right, we're going to get Connor Riley here in a moment. We'll do a Kroger Fresh Take with him, looking at everything that's been going on with Georgia spring practice. Connor's actually been doing something that's really cool. I spent a good bit of time with that this morning. There's like an ongoing blog that's being updated every time, you know, kind of new news comes out with spring practice. With COVID and restrictions on being at practice, seeing eyewitness accounts, things like that, there's a lot of, you know, ear to the ground stuff that has to go on, parsing things that show up on videos, things like that. And Connor's really doing a good job of just kind of chronicling everything that's out there. So we'll kind of get a spring practice update from him here coming up in just a couple of moments. Also, some of you are participating in our Dog Nation Bracket Contest. We'll give you a little bit of an update on that. And, of course, with Connor here in a moment, we'll also give a quick shout-out to the Lady Dogs. Big win yesterday in round one of the NCAA tournament. Great to have them as a part of March Madness here. But as I said before that, around the doghouse. And I thought that former Georgia tight end Trey McKitty said something really interesting the other day, and there's been so much going on that we just haven't had a chance to get to it before now, but in my mind, it is not to be missed. McKitty, who was tight end at Georgia, now looking forward to moving on to the NFL, was asked the other day after Georgia's pro day to kind of assess another one of the tight ends that he worked with at UGA, that the former five-star recruit now going into his second season in the program, Darnell Washington. Now listen, we do this every year. You ask the former players about the current players, and the former players really like to talk up the current players. They just kind of get a sense that's what the media wants to hear. It's kind of a fun thing for them to do. Obviously, for those of us who like to fan the flames of hype and hysteria, it kind of works for our business model. So this is one of those things that kind of sort of serves everyone's purposes, at least to a degree. But sometimes the things that are said actually mean a little bit more than others because of the specific nature of the compliment. So McKitty complimenting Darnell Washington is not necessarily all that newsworthy, but there is something specific that McKitty says about Washington that I do think really matters. So let me let you hear McKitty when asked about Darnell Washington and see if you notice what I noticed. Take a listen to this.
He's going to be a problem. You know, I said this a lot, even to talking to teams this offseason, like, you know, guys that come in as a five-star, you know, really think they know it all and, you know, have a big head, but he really came in, like, willing to learn. You know, he'd come to me asking questions all the time, and I think that was huge. You know, me being an older guy, so I was able to help him. I think he'd be a great player in the future.
So the thing that jumps out to me here is the idea that McKitty, who has been around the block, you know, played at two Power Five programs, getting ready to move on to the NFL, says, when I look at someone like Washington, I see someone who's willing to learn. Now, for most people, when they look at Darnell Washington, the thing that jumps off the page more so than anything else are his physical characteristics. You know, he wears number zero. That's a little bit the kind of thing that makes him stand out. But trust me when I tell you, and for those of you who, you know, seen him in person, you know what I'm talking about. He's just noticeable. Even on a field of 85 other SEC-level players, Washington's just the kind of guy that just looks different. He's got good posture, you know, big, broad shoulders, tall, you know, on that side of the ball. He just looks different. But McKitty says, not, hey, I'm impressed with his physical characteristics. He says, I'm impressed with the fact that he's willing to learn. I'm impressed with the fact that he was willing to ask me questions. He's humble enough to seek advice from other people. Here's the thing that many of you know, if you've ever spent time, you know, growing up around high school sports, things like that. Sometimes great athletic ability should be a blessing, but it kind of ends up being a curse because the people who have great athletic ability are content to simply rest on their athletic laurels and they don't do the hard work necessary to really hone and fine tune their athletic craft as well as they could. But when you have a five-star level athlete who, as McKitty describes, also being someone willing to learn, willing to ask questions, to go back to the phrase that McKitty used at the start of that clip, being a problem on opposing defenses, you better believe that's true. The last thing SEC defenses want to hear is someone who's as physically gifted as Washington is also being willing to do the hard work necessary to get the most out of that athletic talent. There is no doubt that Darnell Washington stands as one of the biggest curiosities on the Georgia roster. Just how good can he be? Well, based on what McKitty just said there, apparently very, very good before his time at UGA is done. That is Around the Doghouse. This is Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And for now, on a whole lot more on what's going on around the UGA program as spring practice rolls on, let's get Connor Riley as a part of a Kroger Fresh Take.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Well, so Connor Riley here, Kroger Fresh Take with him. A lot to come on Georgia spring practice. Connor, before we do that, though, I do want to bring you on the Bobo thing to begin with. I love the fact that Georgia fans get a little bit worked up about this. I like the fact when opposing fans kind of do that, it's something related to Georgia. We have one of these things like every couple of weeks, it seems like, where there's a little bit of a Twitter, you know, Pier 6 brawl related to, you know, something that somebody said. It is the thing to me that makes the SEC really, really fun. And, you know, I don't quite know yet how I feel about Bobo at Auburn, but in terms of just kind of spicing things up, to me, nothing like that's ever a bad thing.
He's not helping himself endear himself to a fan base that is already sort of how should we feel about this guy, just given his tenure as the offensive coordinator at Georgia. And then obviously there's the long-term potential that he could eventually end up back at Georgia given his relationship with Kirby Smart, given we've seen Will Muschamp, his former employer, come to Georgia as an analyst. So I'm not exactly sure. I understand having to lie for the company line, but sure. I'm not exactly sure you needed to praise Auburn in that
well,
moment.
Well, can I just, honesty compels me to admit this, that as much as we look at Bobo and say, oh, he's just saying whatever he needs to in the moment, honesty does compel me to admit that fans are very much the same way. Because if you want to go back to a couple of years ago, fans were trashing Will Muschamp all the time. All the time. Muschamp was not a popular figure with Georgia fans a couple of years ago. In fact, after South Carolina beat Georgia and the South Carolina players were tearing up the hedges, go back and see some of the stuff that Georgia fans were saying about Muschamp then. But now that he's back working at Georgia as an analyst, all of a sudden he's kind of treated as a conquering hero returning home. So it's not just the coaches that say whatever they need to do to fit the feeling in the moment. Fans have a tendency to do a little bit the same thing.
So you're saying fans lie as well.
I'm saying that the emotion state of fans would cause them to feel differently about people from year to year. I would think that's the thing that's kind of going on.
All right, well, I'm going to say fans lie as well.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair way to say that. Well, no lies here. Let's tell the truth related to Georgia spring practice. You had something that I thought was kind of interesting the other day, and let me build to it this way. Kenny McIntosh injured, and now, you know, Mike Griffith is reported out for spring. Obviously, he's shown a, you know, photograph on Instagram of the injured elbow here. I'm assuming this is not a long-term deal, but it is a reminder that, hey, you know, you better be glad you have all these running backs because from time to time, guys are going to get banged up. And, you know, kind of how this changes the dynamic of that running back room as we head towards G-Day on April 17th, it's at least worth paying attention to, is it not?
Yeah. Last year, Zamir White was the only Georgia running back that had at least one carry in every game. That goes to show you just sort of the wear and tear that these guys occur over the course of the season. And I think the biggest thing for me is, all right, so now what does this mean for Kendall Milton? Because I think we sort of knew what we were going to see with Zamir and what we were going to see with James Cook. And I thought going into that G-Day game and really throughout spring practice, it was going to be a chance for Kenny McIntosh and Kendall Milton to continue to show what they are and grow as players. Well, now Kenny's not going to get a chance to do that, and I'll be interested to see if Kendall and Dejon Edwards as well take advantage of those extra reps and say, hey, come fall, Kendall's a guy that clearly needs more carries and more work in this offense because now he's going to get a chance to impress not just as a running back but also as a pass blocker and also as a pass catcher.
So I mentioned before you came on the air a moment ago that you've been doing the kind of running blog, kind of updating everything going on with Georgia spring practice. I think it's been really good. And one of the things you dropped in there was a link to a video that Georgia put out the other day of Kendall Milton. Mm-hmm. And it's a really cool video because obviously Milton had some terrific highlights a year ago. The run against Tennessee is one of those things that I think will kind of always be remembered, even though it wasn't a touchdown play because he just shed so many tacklers on the way to, you know, gaining some yards there. But at the end, it's this really cool graphic where it transitions from 22, the number that Milton wore a year ago, to 2, the number that he's going to wear now. First of all, how frequently does Georgia do this individual video like that for a player that that player shares on his own account? Does this happen more frequently? Because I don't remember a lot of examples of this.
I remember some examples of it, but I don't remember it being that all frequent of an occurrence, which is why it caught my attention yesterday when Milton put it out there as he did.
It was a very good video, a cool thing that Milton himself is the one that shared, and a cool graphic there at the end. I guess let me try to sum all this up this way, because you're right. There is a lot of interest in Kendall Milton, and the McIntosh injury, while not a good thing, only heightens the anticipation that people have to now see more of Kendall Milton. And, you know, there's obviously James Cook, Demir White coming back. I've kind of made the case for what, you know, can happen for backs like this in their senior year. So the way I kind of want to ask this is this. Do you think the Georgia running back situation in 2021 will resemble any previous year under Kirby Smart in terms of how carries are dispersed, or do you think this is an entirely new thing? Because to give a little backup on this, you know, in 17 and 18, there were two backs that got a lot of carries, and like, say, in 2017, a guy like DeAndre Swift got some carries number three role. By the time you rolled around in 2019, that was kind of a one-horse situation with DeAndre Swift getting, you know, the majority of the carries, and last year was maybe a little bit more of a version of that with Zamir. I mean, what do you think the running back pecking order looks like? Is it an entirely new thing from Kirby Smart in terms of the dispersion, or does it more closely resemble kind of what we've seen from Kirby in some of these previous
years? So I think it's going to resemble 2017, but not in the way most people would think. I think Zamir is pretty clearly going to be in that Nick Chubb role. I believe Zamir will be the leading rusher this year. He may not always be flashy, but he's going to be consistent. He's going to get 5-6 yards a carry and sort of be the goal line back and the guy that I think Nick Chubb was on that 2017 team. I actually think Kendall Milton is going to be the Sony Michel type guy, the guy that finished second, the more explosive playmaker, the big play guy. And then I think in that DeAndre Swift role, you're going to see James Cook, the change of pace guy who gets some carries. And James will probably be more involved than DeAndre was as a freshman in 2017. But I expect it to be something like that. And ultimately, you know, the number splits might break out to Zamir gets 1,100. Kendall and James get around 700 rushing yards, but I think expect something like that, to where James is the complete change of pace back. Zamir is the consistent, you know, he's going to get 15 to 20 carries a game, and then Kendall is going to be the guy who might get 11 or 12, but he might break off some long runs in there.
I mean, the one thing about James Cook that some fans have pointed out, you know, you parse these videos and photographs and everything you can, that certainly photographic evidence would seem to suggest that James Cook is in good physical condition right now, and it stands to reason that part of the reason why you might come back to Georgia if you are Cook is a way of kind of demonstrating not only can you catch the ball out of the backfield, be the kind of unique weapon that I think a lot of Georgia fans have always seen him as being, but also proving that you can be that traditional tailback too, because obviously if you're the NFL, you want Cook to be able to do both.
Right, and you know, it's funny, we've talked about, you know, is this the year Demetrius Robertson breaks out for a few years in a row now? Mm-hmm. Now we can move James Cook into the, wow, he's really looked impressive physically coming off this offseason. So I think with James and Zamir, there's obviously a reason they came back. Kirby Smart has clearly identified them as leaders on the offensive side of the ball, and I'll be interested to see how frequently he is used come this fall.
In a minute, I'm going to ask you kind of an open-ended question. You can tell me whatever you think has been interesting thus far this spring, but if I'm thinking about kind of the next thing for me, it is the way in which Smart talked about Trayvon Walker the other day, because as I told our audience during the show, anytime Smart brings up a player unprompted, that to me is always the kind of thing that you want to listen to more. In a question about Nolan Smith, Kirby Smart chose to talk about Trayvon Walker. That means, in my mind, that's something that Smart wanted to say. He challenged Walker to have a very big season and talked about the role that Walker could play in the Georgia pass rush, which I thought was all just really, really interesting. And as I said before, in a spring in which we're not seeing much of practice or practice at all, only getting things from Georgia on video, what Smart says matters more than ever, and talking up Trayvon Walker as much as he did the other day, even if it was in kind of a partial challenge to Walker, I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, to me, it's not so much. I agree, it's the Trayvon Walker thing. That was the thing that caught my attention, but it's for different reasons. When you look at the position that Trayvon has traditionally played, that defensive end spot under Malik Herring, Malik played it really well. But the problem and the reason he didn't maybe get the recognition that he deserved was just because it was not asked to be a productive spot on the defensive line. So with Kirby saying, we need Malik to be the Azeez Ojulari, we need him to fill those shoes along with Nolan Smith, that sort of leads me to believe that Georgia's going to make some structural changes, some philosophical changes to this defense and the way they run things. Maybe they're going to encourage them to be more attacking, to be more penetrating, as opposed to in the past we've seen from Georgia's defensive line to sort of just be, hey, occupy blocks, allow linebackers to go make plays. But the strength of this Georgia defense is along that front four, and if you have guys like Trayvon Walker and you have guys like Nolan Smith, maybe you should let them attack a little bit more, and I'm excited to see if that's exactly what ends up happening come this fall.
Well, the other thing I said about this on the show the other day was, in that same kind of conversation, Smart openly acknowledging some things that I think are obviously true, that Georgia was better from a pass rush standpoint last year than it was a year ago, and I think Smart also fairly clearly stated they need to continue that here for 2021. You know, this is one of the things I'm a big believer on. Connor, you've heard me harp on this for years, that to me the championship formula is explosive plays on offense and kind of dynamic negative plays on defense. You don't even have to be great defensively. You just have to be kind of dynamic when it matters most. LSU was kind of like that in 2019. As a for instance, to hear Smart speak so unmistakably about the need to get sacks, create havoc plays, giving Lanning some of the credit for that being better a year ago, and saying now that needs to continue this upcoming season. As someone who really wants that for Georgia, the fact that Smart was talking about it as openly as he was the other day, I took that as a really good sign.
Yeah, we talked a lot about the 40 sack number. If Georgia had played 13 games a season ago based on their per game sack averages, they would have gotten to 41 sacks, crossing that sort of threshold. That's what you need to see Georgia not just reach in 2021, but do more of. Get closer to that 45 range. Improve off of what you did a season ago. And I certainly think there's the potential and talent in there to do that. And I found when Kirby brought up Lanning in the manner that he did, I found that very interesting, giving him perhaps more credit than I think most normally would there. And to me, that's sort of telling as, all right, this guy has clearly had an influence on this defense. And, hey, other schools, this is a guy you can really trust to make tinkers and alterations to your program for the better.
Well, I've said this now going back months, that I think it's amazing to me. Everything around Georgia football gets kind of hyper-analyzed and sort of talked to death. It's very hard to have something that doesn't get enough attention. But Georgia, you know, strong-arming Big Bank takes Little Bank? You know, big banking Texas to keep Dan Lanning in place. I still don't think that particular talking point has been discussed enough, because I do think that Lanning is a sharp defensive mind. I do think the nature of Georgia's defense was kind of evolving in a way last year that I think is a little more closely aligned with what the best teams have done. Even if Georgia did give up big point totals against Florida and Alabama, the overall, I guess, mood around the defense, I think, is kind of moving in a really positive direction right now. I think keeping Lanning in place is a big, big part of the Georgia offseason storyline, and I just still don't think that's quite gotten enough attention.
Right, and with the way look at the way Georgia's defense played in the 2016, 2017, 2018 years under when Mel Tucker was a defensive coordinator and Kirby was still obviously very involved in that. Even going back to his time in Alabama, it had never been a really, I would say, aggressive defense from a tackles for loss and pass rushing standpoint. They were not really trying to create those negative plays so much. They said, all right, hey, try and drive the field on us. We're going to be disciplined. We're going to be gap sound. And if you want to score, we're not going to give up big plays on the back end. You're going to have to go on these 10, 11, 12, 13 play drives. And even I think in 2019, that bled through as well. But last year, and again, I think so much of this is dictated not because of Georgia just saying, hey, we got to blow this up. It's they have to change it because this is the way college football is going now. You have to create negative defensive plays as much as offenses now have to create explosive plays on the other end. So this is sort of a reaction to that. And, you know, it wasn't maybe as fast or as quick as everyone would have liked, especially with the talent Georgia had on defense a season ago. But I do think it was a step in the positive direction with Lanning last year, and I expect that to continue into 2021.
Anything else about spring practice you want to mention here before we move on? I mean, to me, I think the other thing that's interesting is the assumption that we all made that defensive back was an issue. There is nothing that has come out of the mouths of anyone to kind of to sort of belittle the idea. That's a huge question.
Yeah, to quell that. Lewis Seen saying, yeah, I've taken some reps at cornerback, and I don't want to peruse his statements too much there, but he was not exactly thrilled. He thinks and knows that he is a safety, and he's going to be a safety at the next level, but the needs dictate that he needs to play there. Grant, we only hear from Kirby Smart. We've heard from him last Thursday, and I believe the only offensive player we've heard from is Jamari Sawyer. I'm surprised there hasn't been more talk or questions about the Georgia offense yet in terms of what we've seen there. Now, obviously, they've only had three practices. Only one of them has been padded. But even in those first couple of press conferences, the majority of the questions are about the defense and what has to be replaced there, whereas on the offensive side of the ball, and I think Kirby just is naturally going to hold those cards closer to the chest. We still, I'm waiting to hear, and we'll ask these questions this week. What is JT Daniels looking like in year two now that he's getting more of those practice reps? What is Todd Monken looking to do from this offense this year? I think there are some offensive questions that I think are going to need to be answered this week, and I look forward to hearing those answers.
I want to talk some recruiting with you in just a moment. Before that, let me remind you, it is a Kroger Fresh Take with Connor Riley, looking back on spring practice, looking ahead to what's about to take place with UGA recruiting. And of course, all brought to you by our friends at Kroger. And speaking of looking ahead, not too early to start looking ahead to Easter, whether it be the stuff that goes in the baskets, the recipe for the great meal you're hoping to cook for your family. So many folks, you know, now vaccinated and healthy and safe and ready to get back together with family this Easter in a way that maybe you were not able to do last year. If that's in your plans, keep Kroger in your plans there as well. Website to go to learn about everything going on, including great savings, Kroger.com/Easter. That's Kroger.com/Easter. Find out about all the stuff happening this time of year as we get ready for the big day with our friends there at Kroger. So speaking of big days, Connor, Thursday, a big one for UGA recruiting. Malachi Starks getting ready to make his decision. Interesting to hear in his interview with Jeff Sintel that he truly is down to two, although he doesn't say which two. My assumption is it's Georgia and Clemson. But an interesting battle brewing for Starks that's going to come to a head, I think, on Thursday with his announcement. And then, you know, also these rumblings out there with Walter Nolan right now. And just a lot of interesting stuff going on. A lot of this stemming from what happened on Sunday there at Denmark High School and the All-American, you know, kind of camp deal. You know, you certainly get the sense that it's about to be a very fun spring heading towards the summer with these visits opening back up, and the Starks announcement on Thursday is obviously a huge part of that.
Yeah, we'll get to Starks in a little bit. June is going to be a massive, massive month for recruiting, and I think a very telling one as well, because guys are already starting to set up their official visits, and a lot of these guys, I know Addison Nichols, a guy I talked to, his entire month of June is already booked up with official visits that he's going to take, and he's an offensive tackle, plays at Greater Atlanta Christian, top 100 prospect. Jeff's going to have a story on him later this week. One of Jeff's favorites, Eagle Scout, you'll hear that mentioned quite a bit in the shows to come. He's going to Georgia first, and a lot of the in-state Georgia guys, because I wrote about this morning, you know, in-state recruiting in 2019 and 2020, it had sort of, I don't want to say Georgia had neglected it, because they obviously don't, but they had a lot more success recruiting nationally than within the boundaries of Georgia. That in 2021 had to change just because Georgia wasn't able to showcase visits. And I think that has bled into 2022, and I find it very interesting. A lot of the in-state Georgia guys, that first weekend where they're going to have official visits, they're coming to Georgia. Gunnar Stockton, Oscar Delp, Kojo Antwi, Nichols, Denylan Morissette, there we go. A lot of those in-state products are going to be coming that first weekend, and I think it's a continuation of Kirby saying, hey, we had a lot of the success recruiting and locking up the in-state battles in 2021 and even going back to 2017, 2018. Why not try and replicate that blueprint? Because it's clearly, I think, been pretty successful.
And if you just go to, like, say, the state rankings at a site like 24/7 Sports or something like that, I mean, it really is very apparent just visually. Other than the Collins Hill kid who's going to Florida State, it's like, you know, you look at all the top targets in the state of Georgia, all of them are thought to have strong ties to Georgia or be outright UGA commits. It is really interesting. And I saw your piece at DogNation.com continuing the momentum that was started last year. And, you know, listen, I'm a hypocrite. I want Georgia to get the best national players and the best in-state players. But if it's close, I do like the idea of taking a player in the state. And I'm saying that more as someone who just likes, you know, rooting for guys, things like that. I mean, as I said before, you know, Georgia has a chance to go out and get Darnell Washington from Nevada. I'm really happy about that, too. But when you get a chance to get these elite players from your own state, it's just easier to follow them. A lot of our audience grows up, you know, that watch them grow up at a high school not too far from them. They go see them play on Friday nights in most cases. I don't think it's a bad development if you are dominating one of the deepest, richest states for high school football. And I'm talking about the Peach State, of course.
Right. And that starts, I think, with Malachi Starks on Thursday. Jeff has had him as the top target on his Before the Hedges show for a long time, I believe, every week of the 2021 calendar year so far. And it's a recruitment that Georgia absolutely has to win. They don't make safeties like they make Malachi Starks, which is what he's going to play at Georgia. And if he doesn't go to Georgia, I think he probably ends up at Clemson, and that's a team you're going to see a couple of times over the incoming season. So it is a very important battle that I think Georgia needs to win, and I'm going to be on hand there with Jeff on Thursday. We're going to have a show there. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's a battle that I think Georgia really needs to win.
Looking forward to that. Also, something I'm looking forward to is the continued run of the Lady Dogs to the NCAA tournament. They got their first tournament win since 2018 yesterday, knocking off the Drexel Dragons. And, you know, Connor, it's fun this time of year, and the Lady Dogs are a big part of that. You know, down a couple starters at the beginning of the game yesterday, overcoming that. I've said before, I am squarely on the Lady Dogs bandwagon now. Happy to see them moving on. I know you were probably impressed as well.
Is that a professional segue there?
It was from one very professional segue.
Yeah, no, Georgia women's basketball, they were a little shorthanded to start yesterday. Gabby Conley still dealing with an ankle injury she had picked up in the week after the SEC tournament. Jenna Stacey getting to San Antonio late on a minutes restriction. I thought she was incredible yesterday. And then Quay Morrison almost getting a triple-double. And they're going to play Oregon, a team that has had recent NCAA tournament success, obviously with Sabrina Ionescu, who's now in the WNBA. But I think this is a Georgia team that continues to play better and better. And from watching them a little bit, they remind me a little bit of Virginia in the sense that they love to play defensive basketball. They're going to grind you out.
You mean Tony Bennett's Virginia?
Yes, Bennett's Virginia. Yeah. And while some people, they've lost in the first round two of the last 3 years. And yes, that is correct, and I hate that. But they are able to play, because of their style and because of the tempo that they play, they can clearly beat elite teams. They beat Texas A&M. They went toe-to-toe with South Carolina. I think as they get deeper into the tournament, their style of play works in favor of them. And so getting through that first-round game against Drexel, where it was tied at halftime, I think is a big first step for this Georgia basketball team.
All right, very quickly on the men's side here for a moment, you mentioned that. I thought LSU-Michigan was great yesterday. I really thought LSU had a chance to win that game, and at the very least, they certainly push Michigan, and Michigan ends up getting a good win there. Alabama handles Maryland. We've said on this show a couple of times that there just does not appear to be much of a threat, at least in my eyes, to Gonzaga. I've not really been a big believer in Alabama because they do rely on the three so much. Did you see something from Alabama yesterday that makes you think in a head-to-head situation they could potentially threaten and challenge Gonzaga?
If they make a lot of their threes, yeah. But watching that Gonzaga-Oklahoma game yesterday, if you want to run with Gonzaga, good luck, because I think Oklahoma really tried to push the tempo with them, and I thought Oklahoma played pretty well yesterday, and Gonzaga just blew them off the floor. And I know Alabama has some nice players, Javon Quinley at guard, Herb Jones at center, but Jalen Suggs might be the best player in college basketball. Mm-hmm. And you know, watching the first two rounds, granted, I have this as my title game, so I believed it going in, so maybe this is confirmation bias, but I think it's going to be Gonzaga-Baylor. And I really, as a college basketball fan, I really hope we get that, because I think that's going to be an incredible game.
I think the most underrated performance in the tournament thus far is a very senior-laden Wisconsin team, and Baylor just handled them with ease.
Yeah.
Handled them with ease. That was a pretty impressive performance.
Similar to Oklahoma, I thought Wisconsin played pretty well against Baylor, and it just didn't matter. Baylor had all the answers and took care of them rather handily.
So we have a bracket contest. It's not like an official promotion. They're all sponsors for this. It's just something we're doing for fun. Is your bracket doing well, or is anybody else? I mean, it's obviously been a topsy-turvy tournament. Anybody got a good bracket going on right now?
So BJ Sweeney is actually in first, our
that's
beloved
one of our
boss.
Yeah, our boss here at Dog Nation.
However, he had picked Illinois to win it all, so his top end is not doing great. I'm currently in eighth, and of the people who picked Baylor to win the national title, which I did.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I picked Baylor to sort of zig because I thought everybody was going to pick Gonzaga, and so of the people that picked Baylor, I'm in first right now. So if Baylor keeps winning and they win the NCAA tournament, I win the pool. That's personally what I'm rooting for. However, I think, and I am ultimately trying to be right here, I think Gonzaga is going to win the national title this year.
Yeah, so I had a kind of a contrarian Final Four. I've all lost at least two of mine. Ohio State, Colorado. I think I had West Virginia Final Four. So actually, I've lost three.
Oh, no.
I've lost three of my Final Four, but I still have Gonzaga winning it all. So I'll claim victory if my national champion pulls it out.
As long as you get that at the end, that's all that matters.
Kind of great stuff all the way around. Thank you for being here. We'll look forward to reading a lot more from you at DogNation.com.
Yep, as always, it was a pleasure.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC 3.
Yeah, so good stuff there from Connor, both in terms of keeping up with our bracket contest and paying close attention to that, but also, more importantly than the brackets, keeping up with what's going on there at Georgia Spring Practice and with UGA recruiting. So check all that out at DogNation.com. And as Connor said, live coverage on Thursday evening as really a very impressive five-star member of the class of 2022, one of the most important gets imaginable for Georgia, gets ready to drop his announcement with Malachi Starks on Thursday, that that is going to be good stuff. All right, let's do the SEC through here. And, of course, good stuff going on there with that there as well. I thought CBSSports.com had a very interesting look at teams that have a chance to bounce back in 2021 after not being as good as they wanted to be the previous year. Now, this is not just in the SEC. There were, you know, teams kind of, you know, outside Penn State, for instance, mentioned there, which is somewhat interesting from an SEC standpoint, given the fact that Auburn, a team we talked about at the top of the show, does go to Happy Valley to play early in the season. That's a team that Ben Kirchhoffer from CBS Sports was suggesting could be a bounce back team. And the team in the SEC that does get that attention is LSU. And I absolutely believe this is true. I believe this is true for a number of reasons. First of all, you look at some of the super senior stuff that has kind of gone on. The notion of a super senior is someone who's, you know, technically in normal years would be through with their eligibility, but has chosen to kind of come back for that fifth year, that extra year of eligibility that was granted because of the global pandemic. Look along both of LSU's lines of scrimmage, offensive and defensive lines. They've got some veteran experience coming back for this year, and I think that gives LSU a chance to be better for that reason alone. The other thing is, you know, from a talent standpoint, you know, measuring it by recruiting rankings over the last, you know, 4 years, I mean, LSU is still, like, there's a lot of these kind of rankings that come out. LSU is still, like, no worse than, you know, fourth or fifth on these lists in terms of, you know, the talent on this roster based on the recent recruiting classes. LSU is still measurably elite when it comes to that there as well. And by elite, I mean far ahead of most of the rest of the country. Obviously, we know, you know, still some unsettled issues when it comes to quarterback. With Miles Brennan coming back after being hurt, you kind of wonder how Max Johnson factors into all of that. But I do believe this is likely one of the big stories in the SEC this fall, is that LSU is going to at least return to being that kind of, I think I've said, like, top 15 type, you know, type status for the upcoming season, which is going to really increase the depth of the SEC West. I don't think there's any question that Alabama is still a contender. That's obvious. I've obviously made my case for Texas A&M maybe being more than a contender, taking a next step beyond the one loss season they had a year ago. All of a sudden now, if you kind of move LSU into that category of solid team in the top 15 of the country, and I don't think that's a stretch, all of a sudden there are reverberations around the rest of the SEC. Think about these, like, second-year coaching staffs. Sam Pittman at Arkansas, Mike Leach at Mississippi State, Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. If the SEC West is as deep as I just described there, it's very hard on all those staffs. And, you know, there's a little bit of a honeymoon in the SEC when you're a first-year coach. You can blame everything on your predecessor, and you kind of have time to sort of set yourself. But by year two, people want to see some movement. That's what got Joe Moorhead in trouble at Mississippi State. Other coaches you can kind of think of, when you don't show big improvement in year two, fans get a little restless. So for Leach and Kiffin and Pittman, all these guys who, at the very least, have gotten a free pass from their fan base, if not are beloved by their fan base, year two is when you're supposed to do even more. And it's hard to do more in the SEC right now, in the West Division anyway, with it as deep as it potentially is. The other thing you think about is LSU is a permanent opponent for Florida. Keep that in mind as well. Florida this season does not have the luxury they had a year ago of playing a schedule that probably looks a little easier than the one that Georgia's playing. If anything, within the SEC world, Georgia's the one that's playing the easier schedule because their SEC West opponents are first-year coach at Auburn and Brian Harsin, and obviously Arkansas coming to Athens after Georgia won easily in Fayetteville a year ago, at least easily in the second half. For Florida, they have to host Alabama in 2021, and they have to play LSU each and every year. So LSU being better is a big, big factor in a crowded SEC West, but also a big factor for Florida there as well. So interesting stuff from CBS Sports on that. Something else that I thought was interesting was Alabama running back Brian Robinson speaking as Bama gets ready to start its spring practice, talking about his reasoning for coming back to Alabama, obviously also looking for that extra year of eligibility right now. And Robinson, former elite recruit who actually is from Tuscaloosa, the quote from him is, "For my decision to come back, I've seen many opportunities for me as far as investing time into this year to become a better player on and off the field," that he says. But obviously it's acknowledged that, you know, Robinson is not necessarily the back that's going to get the lion's share of carries for Alabama this year. You got Kamara Wheaton coming in as a freshman. Obviously Trey Sanders is a name a lot of Georgia fans are very familiar with there as well. It's a deep stable of running backs for Alabama, which you would kind of expect nothing different from. But here's the real reason why I bring this up for Bama and for Robinson or whoever ends up toting most of the load in the Alabama running game. Last year for Bama in 2020, was a little bit of a departure from what the previous years had been for the Crimson Tide in terms of dominant running. Najee Harris obviously had a great season a year ago. Alabama, certainly rushed it very effectively. But the previous years before that had not necessarily been the case. I mean, if you go back to 2017 for Bama, they were dominant on the ground, averaged more than 250 yards per game on the ground. In 2018, though, when kind of the Tua Tagovailoa era kind of fully got going, Alabama sort of lost some of its edge as a rushing team. They were just seventh in the SEC in 2018 at fewer than 200 yards per game. Big drop off to where they'd been the previous year. In 2019, another big drop off down to just 168 yards per game on the ground. So in 2018-2019, the transition that was ongoing with Loxley and then Steve Sarkisian's offensive coordinator saw Alabama not quite as effective running the football as it'd been. As I said, last year was kind of a step back in that direction. In a shorter season, Alabama averaged more than 183 yards per game on the ground. Najee Harris obviously gets a lot of the credit for that. But this is one of those things that I think people can kind of forget, is that last year Alabama was kind of good at everything on the way to winning a national championship. But the 2 years prior to that, Bama had not been a great team on the ground. So if you're wondering about Alabama, which, as I've pointed out before, has only won the SEC West twice in the last 4 years. They have failed to win the division as frequently as they've won it over the course of the last four seasons. The three times that Georgia's been to the SEC championship game under Kirby Smart, they've only played Bama in one of those instances. And some of that is, kind of related to some of the stuff, on the ground, rushing the football, things like that. So whether it's Robinson or whomever carrying the load of the Alabama running game, can they maintain the momentum that Najee Harris helped this program establish last season? That is, to me, still a fairly interesting point of view, that as Alabama wants to still be, dominant with the passing attack, can they also have that ground component to go along with that? Prior to the 2020 season, the previous couple of years before that were a little bit of a mixed bag in relationship to all of that. One more time, I'll remind you that we'll talk about all of these kinds of subjects and more tomorrow, 3 p.m. on the SEC Country video channels for SEC Country Live at 3 p.m. Look forward to doing that with you then. But for now, let's get ready to wrap up this program. And as we do so here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, I told you this yesterday. I believe that we're probably going to do Oral Roberts-themed golden shoes now for the next several days at least. Our buddy Mad Dog had a good one here, putting the ORU mascot head, the logo, on top of a fan who had, or I shouldn't say fan, but someone had gone gator hunting. You see this from time to time on social media. Somebody bagged a couple gators, got them hanging there from a tree. Instead of the hunter, though, our buddy Mad Dog has replaced that with an Oral Roberts jersey and the Oral Roberts mascot head there. Very funny stuff. Mad Dog says looks like Oral Roberts had a very successful hunting trip. So that's very good. Mad Dog's won a lot of golden shoes. We'll give him one. And as I said before, stay tuned for probably plenty of Oral Roberts-themed golden shoes coming up in the days ahead. Also, stay tuned for this Gator Hater Countdown, 221 days. Georgia beats Florida. We'll see you then and see you tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Y'all have a great day, everybody. And on the podcast, time now for our R.S. Andrews podcast cool down. Couple comments here today. As I said before, and I have said before, we want to try to keep this portion of the show short because some people don't like the podcast to be too long. So hopefully you're enjoying what we're doing here. It's certainly something I wanted to do to kind of add value to our podcast audience, those of you who've been with us for as long as you have been. It means so much to me that you tune in to listen each and every day. I can't tell you how grateful I am for that, and I continue to promise you more fun stuff on the podcast to come. And I mean this podcast only, not just for those scoundrels on the video side. Podcast stuff is going to be coming out. But I think it's going to be really, really fun. It's all brought to you today by our friends at R.S. Andrews, air conditioning, heating, plumbing, and electric. You can trust R.S. Andrews to kind of handle all those systems there in your house. We're heading towards a time of year in which air conditioning is about to be working overdrive. So get your system tuned back up to factory fresh specs. Find them online at rsandrews.com. Let me do a couple of things here. I'm going to do some stuff on our comment section. By the way, if you listen to this part and you want to have your voice heard, question you want to ask, comment you want to share, one of the best ways to do that is when we post the show each and every day to the, as I call it, worldfamousdognation.com, there's a comment section down the bottom of the page, and you can type in your remark right there, and I'll read it right here. It's kind of the way we can interact with each other, obviously, for a lot of the video people. Now, most of the video people don't watch the show live, but for the ones that do, they share their comments kind of in the moment. This is our way kind of after the fact for the on-demand consumers to give you a chance to do that there as well. At dognation.com, when I posted the show yesterday, Duke wrote this. He said, "Hey, Brandon, I'm excited about the new SEC Country Show starting tomorrow. I was not a listener before you transitioned to Dog Nation Daily, so a couple of questions. On Dog Nation, you're unapologetically a dog fan. Will you approach the SEC Country Show from a, quote, unbiased position? And will there be a podcast form of this? Thanks for all you do, bringing excellent content year-round." So I think it's a really great question. Obviously, from a podcast standpoint, yes, it is certainly our intention to have that as a podcast, much the same way that it is a regular show. Will we have a podcast for Wednesday's show? That's a really good question. But we will definitely have a podcast for that, because I really like to make the things that I do available on podcasts, because obviously I love that form of consumption. So short answer to the second question, yes, we will have a podcast, and hopefully that'll also be true for a Wednesday show there as well. As far as your first question, I think that's a really interesting thing. And yeah, my goal with everything is to always be as honest as possible. Because here's like the one thing I really believe, that the notion of objectivity, you know, totally unbiased, for the most part, doesn't really exist. People have biases, right? I mean, people have, you know, feelings about certain things. It's not necessarily always the bias that might come, you know, from being a fan of a school, but there's a, you know, a bias in some direction about something. That's just an obvious fact. You don't have to, you know, look very far to find that kind of stuff if you want to see it. And I've always been a big believer in this, that, you know, the perspective that you get as a fan does not necessarily mean you think everything related to Georgia, the school that I happen to like, is always perfect. You know, sometimes fans can actually overrate the bad things related to their favorite team because they are watching their team more close than they watch somebody else. And so I think, given the fact that the way that most fans talk about SEC football is, hey, I like this team, but here's what I think about that team. And, you know, I don't like this team because they're a rival to my you know, favorite team. But you have to admit, like, for instance, none of us like Alabama, but when you listen to this show, we obviously have to give Alabama credit for being as good as they've been. And what I kind of find from Alabama fans is they actually kind of appreciate that. They appreciate the honesty that says, hey, I'd love nothing more for you not to be good, but right now you are good, so I'm going to begrudgingly give you a little bit of credit. They actually kind of enjoy that. And so when we've had SEC conversations in the past, when we used to do SEC Country Live years ago, that formula always really seemed to work. And if you watch ESPN now, you don't see as much of the, I am a broadcaster doing broadcasting, and I've got my tie tightened tight, and I've got my suit on, and I'm, you know, completely devoid of personality. I'm right down the middle. You don't see a lot of that. Most of their anchors are even encouraged to express fandom for, you know, certain schools, because that's how real people behave. This notion that people watch sports objectively and so therefore it should be covered objectively, for the most part, that only exists in sort of the ivory towers of, you know, certain self-serious people. That does not really exist in the real world. So, yeah, I mean, we kind of approach the show from the standpoint of being a fan. That means that when I talk about Florida, I will probably say I don't want Florida to be good. I'll probably very much acknowledge that. But that doesn't mean that everything that happens at Florida is truly bad. And sometimes I may have to admit, you know, as we've been forced to admit a little bit over the last year or so, that not everything that Dan Mullen has tried has been a total disaster, although enough of it has been bad that it's at least still entertaining. So that's kind of the thought on that, that we will approach SEC Country the same way we approach this, as honestly as we possibly can, with, you know, my full personality hopefully on display. But I really appreciate you asking that question, and hopefully we're able to, you know, get that done as the show starts tomorrow. At Georgia on Tap reached out on Twitter about the Ty Fagan news for the Georgia basketball team yesterday. Fagan was kind of a big deal going in the transfer portal because you've had a couple of guys, for, you know, off the Georgia roster have kind of put themselves in the portal, and for the most part, maybe, you know, in some cases, not necessarily guys that a lot of Georgia fans were shedding tears over. But the Fagan news is a little bit different because he'd, you know, been a contributor for Georgia, big player. And I know there's a lot of frustration with Crean about this, Tom Crean, the coach, on social media related to all the players that he's had going into the transfer portal. And you got Walker Kessler now in the transfer portal at North Carolina. A lot of folks wondering if, you know, Georgia get involved with that. Look, my only opinion on this is this. I think there are like 700 players in the basketball transfer portal right now. There could be a couple thousand by the time, you know, the spring is done. obviously Crean is dealing with both sides of this, right? He's dealing with the guys that are leaving his program and the guys that he's bringing in from other programs, and sometimes that works out really well. Sometimes it kind of doesn't. But I have no idea how this much mobility could be good for the sport. And I'm sympathetic to the players who want to be at a place where they're happy and at a place where they're going to be used to the what they believe is their utmost ability. I get all of that. And obviously the one-time transfer rule, which, by the way, hasn't even taken place yet, at least in full effect, is only going to increase this kind of stuff more. But honestly, jumping ship the moment you have any kind of bad feeling about a place, I'm not quite so sure that's going to work out for these players as much as they think it's going to. Some guys do transfer and go on to have great success. I'm sure they're way happier. But I think the current state of the situation for George with all his basketball transfers, Fagan included, is a little bit more just in line with the chaos that exists all across the sport right now, more so than it does for me anything related to Crean. Obviously, you want a little more stability with the program. It's, Tom's job to produce all of that. But my gosh, this sport has kind of become the Wild West a little bit with, just guys just changing teams at the drop of a hat. You almost wonder, are you even allowed to coach guys up anymore without fear that they're going to just move on? And I have, no idea what happened in Fagan's situation. I'm certainly not pretending to, but this notion that, a guy that was seemingly finding a home would then that quickly, look to move on somewhere else, to me reflects a pretty chaotic scene in relationship to college basketball right now with guys leaving Georgia and also guys leaving other programs there as well. So I'm not quite so sure what you do about that. I don't want players to feel like they're held prisoner anywhere. But man, this much movement, this many guys in the transfer portal with seemingly a whole lot more to come, I don't quite know how that's a good thing for the sport, but we'll certainly follow it and see where it goes. And if you want to weigh in on that or any other topic, you're certainly free to do so on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily, comment section at DogNation.com as a part of our R.S. Andrews cooldown. Of course, you can find them at rsandrews.com, air conditioning, heating, plumbing, and electric. They'll show up on time to do the work that's promised for the price that's promised. If your water heater goes out, in many cases, RS Andrews can replace it for you the same day, but you have to find them online at rsandrews.com. You have a great day. See you back here tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Or what, you don't care what time it is. That's what time we record it. You listen to it whenever you do. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Whenever you consume the show, we appreciate it, and we'll talk to you then.